Freedom Empowered is back after a long break. Today we talk about George H.W. Bush, fentanyl, and the opioid crisis we have. And we have a little free think for you. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, everyone. We should actually say welcome back to ourselves because I know it's been, what's it been, Nick? 2 weeks?
Yeah, just about 2 weeks.
Me and Nick had a few things to take care of. That's why we've been off the air for a little bit. But I'm sure you guys didn't stop learning without us because the things that we talk about on this show probably inspired you to get out there and achieve some crazy feats. But anyways, a lot has happened since we last spoke, and I think that this episode's going to be pretty interesting. We're going to talk about, give our condolences to George H.W. Bush. We're going to talk a little bit about the opium crisis, and then talk a little bit about how to take advantage of your opportunities. But anyways, if this is your first time listening, as always, thanks for joining us. And we make it our goal to teach all of you returning listeners a little something new every day. You want to kick it off, Nick?
Yeah, sure. So first, George H.W. Bush. He was a war hero and the 41st president. He passed away earlier in the week. Yeah, and they're doing the whole funeral service they did it yesterday, and they have it on CNN, I believe. They have a whole tracker of where his body's at right now.
What do you mean where it's at? So what are they doing with it?
They're gonna fly it back to Texas.
Where was he when he died?
Not in Texas.
You don't even know?
No, I don't know exactly where he was at when he died. I'm sure he died.
He
in
was
the
pretty
hospital,
old.
To the truth.
Well, he was pretty old, so I just assumed that like he didn't leave Texas very often. But I don't know. Does their whole family live on like one compound, like him and George 1W Bush?
I'm sure there's like a family compound, but I'm sure they each have probably their own compound too. I don't know. The Bushes are very rich people.
Right. Of course. No, I was looking into H.W. and it talked about it. He went, or for those of you that don't know, he was a bomber pilot in World War II. He actually got a lot of awards. There's one time in particular where he got shot down and then survived and was rescued by a Navy boat, which that's kind of, I mean, I don't know, during World War II you get shot down and then you survive and then you don't drown. I mean, pretty impressive. And then after the war, he went to Yale and got his degree and then made a bunch of money in the Texas oil.
Oh, quick story about that. When he was at Yale, I guess he played baseball. He actually has a picture with Babe Ruth when Ruth was getting old. Yep. Fun fact of the day.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And then I don't think his son went to as good of a school, I think. George Bush went to like Texas A&M. Wouldn't he get like C's or something? Wasn't there like a story about how he got straight C's at school?
I'm not sure, but I don't know. People always made jokes about George W. Bush, about not being smart and all that stuff.
But yeah, great president. He is, one thing I read is that he got the American military back on its feet after the crushing losses of Vietnam and then Korea. He basically threw the United States military a couple of slow pitches with Panama and what's the Grenada, and basically gave us some easy chicken after the Cold War, and then into the Gulf War. So, you know, whatever you think about war, he definitely played a major role in the transitioning from one era to the next. I actually read this one. This is more of a conspiracy type of thing, but I thought I'd mention it. It kind of goes back to where I was confused why he wasn't in Texas. Was that my understanding, or from a lot of people's understanding, some of the stuff that occurred during both of the Bush's presidencies could be misconstrued as war crimes by the wrong person. So the article that I had read said that they don't like to go outside of Texas because technically any judge in any country can indict you for a war crime. So technically, which I don't know if it would happen in the U.S., but they say this is specifically why they don't leave the country, but also a big part of why they don't leave the state is because technically if they like went up to a different state, some local judge could be like, I indict you with war crimes. And if they got enough fucking local police on their side, technically the local police could like arrest them for war crimes. And so that was a big thing why they say they don't leave the country, is because if they did, like the Hague would immediately snatch them up. Which is interesting, because you know how many, it during a time of war, how much occurs that could be misconstrued as war crimes. I don't know, but apparently, and from what I understand, the whole Patriot Act thing, like, it had its purpose, and it definitely was in response to, you know, the worst terrorist attack this nation's ever seen. But also, there was a lot of things that, in a time that wasn't so tumultuous, a lot of the things that got passed in the Patriot Act might not have been passed in a more sensible time. A less emotionally charged time. I don't know. Interesting.
Well, yeah, I agree with you there about the Patriot Act, but that was George W. Bush. And the thing about the war crimes, I don't think, even if that was a true thing, I don't think they would ever get charged. I don't think anyone would mess with the U.S. like that.
Yeah, no, it was just something I was reading.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, it's pretty interesting. And here's my next question, just to get a little bit political, because you know how me and Nick don't like this blind political division and allegiance to whichever side you're on. Everyone says RIP George H.W. Bush, but I'm sure at his time there was a lot of people that saw him, especially when he was getting America into new wars, as some sort of imperialist or some sort of hyper-conservative globalist. So that, or imperialist. So my question is, does it change over time? Like, you see all the division we have right now, 20 years from now when President Trump passes away, is the whole world going to mourn him as well, and we're going to get a federal holiday out of it? I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting.
Wait, so George H.W. Bush officially has a federal holiday?
No, he doesn't officially have a federal holiday, but I mean,
I know back on Wednesday, a lot of military people got the day off.
Right, that's true. And then, I mean, here's the thing. You think that, oh, well, maybe we won't have a federal holiday, but how many presidents have died recently? Not that many. Was Reagan the last one to die? There was Ford died. But that was like in 2006 or something. Like, there's been not a lot of presidents have died, and George H.W. Bush is a major president. So who's gonna be the next one to die? Who's still alive? It's I mean, I don't know. You're right. But HW, that was a huge time for us. I mean, I could see it totally becoming a federal holiday. 100%. But my point is, it's crazy how, you know, divided we are politically today. Like, and I just want to see what happens. I really want to see what happens when President Trump dies. I want to see what people say.
Just a heads up to any Secret Service members listening. We are not threatening the president. We're just saying in the future, we want to see what happens.
I mean, the dude is like 75 or something.
And no, he's 71 now.
Well, but he's pretty out of shape. He doesn't have a good diet. Apparently he's on like Adderall that's help him focus. So that's another conspiracy. I mean, it's not even a conspiracy, it's proven, but he calls them diet pills, but I'm sure it's simply a way for him to be more productive. And but everyone who is running a major business, or anyone who's a, not saying everyone, but that you would be surprised how many people that are extremely high functioning, running either a massive business or in some sort of high tier, you know, school program or doctoral program, are on Adderall. I mean, because here's the thing, other than it being illegal and then partially bad for your health, there's no reason to not be taking Adderall. It's like, just like a productivity booster, basically. So it's pretty interesting. And going into, I guess we'll transition now into drugs that are legal, but are definitely being misused. Talk a little bit about the fentanyl crisis. So fentanyl, which many of you know, it's an opioid. It is synthetic. But the difference about fentanyl is that the amount it takes to kill you is like a powder on the tip of a pencil. So the amount of deaths that have been caused by opioids has gone through the roof, like to an incredible amount. I was trying to look up.
From 2012 to 2016, there was an 80% increase in overdoses.
Right. Well, it's not even that. So I'm looking at a graph right now, and basically it's comparing cocaine, heroin, the other opioids, that's like oxycodone, morphine, hydrocodone. Oh, those are, yeah, other natural or semi-synthetic opioids. But basically for all of them, cocaine has a little spike. But for the most part, it's super low. And fentanyl is the lowest. It's sitting around like 4,000 until 2013, where it shoots up. And then in a matter of like 3 years, it's up to over 25,000 overdose deaths at the current time. But at the same point, the other drugs, cocaine, heroin, oxycodone, morphine and stuff, they went up, and it's been a crisis, but they're up at around 12, 13,000 deaths. So fentanyl is by far just the new big issue on the block. And
it's like the opioids in general are a big issue.
Right, the opioids in general. And so they started with the opioid epidemic in the 90s, where doctors were just prescribing. I don't know if it was just doctors not understanding the full potential of these drugs, or if it did have some sort of diabolical, you know, monetary reasoning for it. But I don't know. All we know is that a lot of people got addicted to these things, and now it's a crisis.
Well,
and
here's the thing with... Well, supposedly it's still getting overprescribed, and...
Oh, it definitely is, right.
And well, like, I don't know if it's because they feel comfortable prescribing it to a bunch of people, or... I don't know, I've heard some things like, nowadays doctors have to do so much paperwork, and they're just so much busier nowadays, where it's just easier to write a prescription. And this is just for like any drugs, really. It's almost easier to just write a quick prescription for that symptom that they're having than it is to actually like dig deep into the...
Well, yeah, so what you mean is, so it's not that it's easier to write a prescription. It's not like prescriptions is the easy way out. What it is that doctors don't have time to challenge your self-diagnosis. So if you come in and say, my back is hurt and my pain level's a 9 out of 10, they're not going to put you through a bunch of tests to figure out that you're a pussy and it's really a 4. Yeah,
because it's expensive,
too. And that your back's not hard. Right. So they're just going to be like, okay, let me do this quick, like, I'll flick you in the back test. You are feeling the pain. Here's the painkiller. You know what I mean? And whether or not, and a lot of the issue is not even people that are just trying to fraudulently get prescribed pain meds, but just in general, people don't know the addictiveness of these things. So then they just get a prescription for like 2 months. And here's the thing, man. And this is why it's so dangerous. It's because it's not even an addictive thing. It's not like, it's not even like it's some conspiracy. But if you get a 2 month prescription where you're told to take 3 of these pills a day for 2 months, you are going to be physically addicted to it. I had friends that literally noticed they had a problem and had to have their buddies pour this stuff down the drain because you're addicted. I mean, can you imagine if you were given like a cocaine prescription for 2 months and you were taking cocaine every day for 2 months? Like, you're going to come out the other side addicted. It's not like a one-time thing. And that's the issue with these long-term prescriptions. If they said, okay, here's a week of them while you get over like the worst of your pain, but the thing is, they're getting prescribed no longer for like surgeries and stuff, but they're getting prescribed for long-term pain. Like, I have a injured back, I need something for the pain long-term for the next 10 years. And that's what the issue is here. And that's another thing is, from what I understand about opioids, is that when you take an opioid, it does relieve the pain, but because the properties of it that cure pain, it makes your neurons or your pain receptors extra sensitive. So like, in order to absorb the pain treating properties of these pills, your pain receptors become extra sensitive. So then, you know what happens? You can't get off them, because if you get off them, now you're going to feel the pain even worse, because now you went from, you know, you just feeling the pain to now, okay, my I'm going to get extra sensitive, but also getting treated with these pain pills. And now if you ever try to stop them, you're going to be hurting twice as bad. And then that's the first part that's bad. And then the second part is what a lot of people do once they realize they're in this never-ending cycle of just pain pills is they get depressed. And then they get on antidepressants, and that's when you die. Is because now you have a, you know, exponential road of being prescribed to not only a pain pill but an antidepressant. And that the antidepressants are another one where, you know, I'm not saying that you might not have an issue, just like you might not have, I agree that people have issues that they need them for, but so what, you're just going to be on antidepressants till you die? That's what our medical community does nowadays. It's not saying we just treat symptoms now. We treat the symptoms of pain. We treat the symptoms of depression. But why don't we talk about how do we cure the depression? Well, how do we cure the pain? Why don't we fix the person's back? Why don't we tell them that they're, you know, overweight and that's probably why you're, you know, needing pain meds? Why don't we have you lose 20 pounds and do some yoga? And then maybe you don't have to be on these pills anymore. But who am I? Definitely not a doctor. Definitely not a doctor. But anyways, long story short, we just went on all about the overall issue. But the thing is with fentanyl, so in China, you can change one molecule of a drug and then it's a whole new drug. So basically, when like they would outlaw fentanyl, or the for example, like let's say they outlaw fentanyl, they change one molecule. It's still fentanyl, but it's got one molecule difference. So then they would just call it a different drug, and now it's legal. And that was just a loophole in their laws. So what was happening was that there would just be these giant chemical factories over there that were just producing thousands of kilos of fentanyl, synthetic, you know, marijuana, all this, these other drugs. And just every time they would get illegal, they would produce the same thing with a different molecule, and then they would ship it all around the world in the U.S. And that was one of the biggest issues with our fentanyl crisis here, is that it's being like shipped over here from China. So during the G20 summit, what President Trump did, which is something that he should be given props for, but no one really has, because you either like him or you hate him, but he used this forum, which was meant to be an economic forum. And if you don't know, the G20 summit is the 20 biggest economies in the world. But he, on the national stage, basically said, I'm excited to be here, talk about economics. So, but first, our most important topic is going to be fentanyl. And basically, not blackmailed, but China had no interest previous to this to spend the money to crack down on the illegal drug trade, because they don't care, because they don't really have morals. So they, but he forced them on the national, international stage, saying, hey, if you want to get a trade deal done here, you're going to have to also take care of the fentanyl crisis. That's the news. And Nick looks like he's grumpy that I just went on a rant. What you got to say, Nick?
No, you're good. I think the idea that Trump used that stage to basically take on a crisis, which is help being fueled by not necessarily China, but China's lack of laws, is a good thing. And
well, that's so, it's a twofold thing. Keep going.
Well, I read how China is actually going to start, I guess, helping the U.S. fight it. They're going to classify the drug as a controlled drug. And it's actually going to have like some serious criminal punishment. So that's a good thing. They're going to... Like, it worked, basically.
So that's the thing with China, is that they want all the benefits of being a world power. They want all of the, you know, economic benefits of controlling markets and the economy and of taking advantage of being a world power, but they don't want the responsibility of it. You know what I mean? So they want to be able to have the world, the power of the world stage, but still allowing illegal things and bad things to go on in their country, which when you project it at such a high level that they're on, like, could you imagine if we didn't crack down on, you know, drug trades or weapons trades? You know what I mean? What if we could just produce guns and the private citizens can just ship out guns all over the world and we didn't crack down on it? Can you imagine that, the prolific impact it would have on the world? And that's what China's trying to do. They're trying to have the responsibility of a third world, small third world country, but get all the advantages of being a world power. And that's one of the biggest things with the trade deal, which also we came to a huge agreement on, that is the whole purpose for the original trade deal was we gave China a lot of advantages and like loopholes per se, but like we gave it to them because we do that with all third world countries when they're small back in the day. We say, you know what, we're going to help you out. Here's this break. Here's this break. Here's this rule to help you out. And then we help grow their economy. But now China's a world power and is still taking advantage of those, you know, unequal opportunities that we gave them while they were growing, and it was time to change that. And from my understanding, this new trade deal is doing exactly that. So I don't know, double fold thing. One, it's good for the world, and two, you know, maybe the Don isn't as evil as a guy as people think he is, or even if he is that bad of a guy, you know, bad people can do good things too, so give them a little break on this one. What do you think, Nick?
Well, I agree with you that it's good that he did that, because it will help a little bit with the entire situation. And talking about Trump, I don't know, like him, hate him. Praise him when he's right, hate him when he's wrong. That's all you can do. That's all
I think.
You see, that's how everyone right. should be. That's how everyone should be.
Right. Right. 100%. And I think something that Trump brings to the table is people say, well, Trump's not courteous. Trump doesn't follow the rules of American dialogue or of the American political system. And he breaks the rules and he's blah, 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 blah. The way I look at it is the American people are used to a type of secure society that we live in right now where there are rules. But in the international stage, there's no rules. People respect three things: money, power, and fear. That's about it. That's about how the world runs. And you can't go out there and expect the rest of the world to, you know, trust us just because we have good morals. Like, having the best morals doesn't, you know, project power in the real world. So, you know, if there's anything that Trump brings to the table, I think the president should have two different ways of behaving. Okay, in America, when we are working within the confines of our, you know, social system that we've created, okay, be a nice guy, you know, follow the rules. But when we get out of the gates into the international community, you got to smell the blood in the water and do what it takes to win. And that's one thing that I think Trump brings to the table, is he doesn't respect the rules. And when you're talking international affairs, there are no rules. So that's why he's able to demand the respect of people like, you know, the president of China and, you know, in some ways, Vladimir Putin. But, you know, a big argument people have is, well, okay, he's friends with these guys because he's got casinos and shit in their countries. But at the same time, you know, wouldn't you want to keep your enemies close? That's what they say. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. You know, if we really held our noses high and refused to cooperate with every international government that had some skeletons in the closet, well, first of all, we'd have no friends. And two, we got plenty of skeletons in our own closet. That's for sure. It's interesting. That's one of me and Nick's interests, is international politics, for sure, which a lot of you listening probably find a little bit boring. Would rather we talk more about how to make money. But we got plenty of that too. Right, Nick?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about over in the free things section. Or
yeah,
something like that. Yeah. A lot of people look at other people's success and I hear all the time, oh, he got so lucky, or man, or even when something good happens to someone else, man, you're lucky. You know what I mean? That happens all the time. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's not really luck. It only looks like
luck. It only looks like it's not luck at all. And that's the thing, is it's no skin off the people's backs who consider it luck, because it might actually look like luck to them. But the reality is that they just took advantage of an opportunity that they saw. And it's hard to get there. You have to first even have the knowledge to see those opportunities and realize that they're there. But yeah, I mean, if you really looked at anyone that you consider successful and you talk to them, I guarantee you it's taken them 3 to 5 years to devise a plan, to learn and develop the skills, to take action, and then probably a lot of failure. You know, but of course, the only thing that people see is what they see on Facebook. Oh, look at them. They're going on a nice vacation, or they bought a new house, or, you know, look, how come he's never at work or she's never at work? That's what you see. You see the product of success. You don't see the success itself. That's, I think, one of the biggest issues we have today. And that's something that you have to realize is a factor, you know? The more risk you take, the more you seem lucky. Because people go, oh, well, look how lucky they got because they took a massive risk. Well, did they take a risk, or did they take and make a calculated action that they knew that they were going to be able to achieve, you know, because of the effort they put in? I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, like, they knew it would be risky, but they didn't really see it as a risk. They liked their odds, so they took the action.
Right. And that's something that I think we all have to learn to do is, you know, we got to learn to flip the switch. And I guess that'll go into my, I kind of came up with this little analogy. So I look at opportunity, right? I think that there's a couple of different steps to this whole success thing. I think the first is opportunity. And then the second is hard, is, you know, work and development. And then the third is you come out the other side with success. So my analogy is with coal and diamonds, right? So I think opportunity is like coal, right? It's buried and you don't see it a lot of the time. And it doesn't just sit on the top of the ground. So you got to, the first thing you got to do is even find it. You got to know where to look. You got to know what it looks like, and you got to be able to differentiate the difference between a rock and coal. So once you do that, that's the hardest part. Once you figure out what the difference is, that's what that the analogy is you have to develop the skills and the knowledge to even see the opportunity, to even find and see it. Once you find it, the next question is, okay, what are you going to do with this opportunity? And what you have to do is then have the skills to develop that opportunity into something that might create success. So at first you just got this piece of coal that, you know, has an exponential potential for energy. But you have to know what you're going to do with it. So now you have this opportunity, now you're building the opportunity. And then on the other side, you turn it into a diamond. And that's the success that you get. So what most people see, they just see this diamond and go, well, look, he found a diamond. Now, did he find a diamond, or did he find a bunch of coal? Well, did he find a bunch of rocks, sift through the bunch of rocks, find a piece of coal, and then turn the coal into a diamond? What do you think about that analogy, Nick?
It was a lot. I get what you're trying to say. Turning the coal, they basically found an opportunity out of all the different little things, and they found that opportunity and they took it, and then that's how they became a diamond. Yeah. Like a caterpillar to a beautiful butterfly.
And I like to use Jeff Bezos as, you know, one of the best examples for this whole process, right? He saw this thing. Well, so first of all, he was just working. And he had to learn how to, you know, sift through massive amounts of data, which most people don't know how to do. He saw this thing called the internet grew 2,000% in a few months. So, okay, he sees the opportunity. What is the opportunity? I don't know. You just because you see an opportunity doesn't mean you have any idea what you're going to do with it. And he realized that he had to do something. So he quit his job, which was very lucrative and could have been a career for him. And he took a massive risk, moved to Seattle, made his parents refinance their house and to give him $300,000, and started Amazon. And even then it was an immediate success. You know, he had to live, he was working out of a dump basically, and grinded for years before he turned, you know, what he had into Amazon. And a lot of people just go, oh, well, he rode the coattails of the internet. You know, it was all luck. Was it luck? Because how many people, first of all, if you're not educated enough to see that opportunity, it's not luck. That's your fault. It's your fault that you don't develop your knowledge and you aren't constantly trying on a path of learning to where you can see opportunity the way Jeff Bezos did. And then the second part is, how many people were smart enough? How many people saw this thing called the internet growing and never took advantage of the opportunity? They just sat there and watched it pass. You know what I mean? And just looked at it and were too afraid to take the risk. So at the end of the day, I don't know if I could call it luck. I call it badass success. And I call it exciting. And I think
that's why I think it's so important. Like, that's why I think gaining knowledge is so important. Just things you're interested in, just knowledge in general. Because Jeff Bezos, for example, already had the knowledge basically beforehand, or a base knowledge where he was able to see the opportunity because of the knowledge he knew.
Right. And that was one of my biggest points, is you need to always be learning about all sorts of different things, because, you know, you might be in a specific field right now, working a job, saying, okay, how do I find an opportunity in my field? But what if you don't even know? You don't even know what you know. Like, this is a total tangent, but there was a girl that on this podcast I was listening to who used to be a lawyer, quit her job, and now is a professional spearfisher woman. Like, you don't even know what you like. You don't even know what you don't know. Like, you should be, your goal in life, and it should be to learn as much as you can about as much as different things as you can. And then when you find that opportunity in something that you truly love, then pursue it and learn more, and then develop that opportunity to success. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be learning about different things. You should always be learning, always be looking for these opportunities. It should be a never-ending thing. It should be interesting. I find it interesting to learn. And I think that that's one of the big issues with the school system, is that they make learning boring, so people are just adverse to learning. You know what I mean? But learning should be enjoyable. You know, it should be something that people aspire to continue for their whole life. And then, you know, you come out the other side being a very knowledgeable person, being wise.
Yeah, and, well, like, Jeff Bezos is just basically one of the examples we could have used to show that it's not luck. And, well, every episode that we do where we talk about somebody, it's not luck. We break it down every single time, what they did, how they started, the opportunities that they saw, and how they did it.
Yeah, that's what this show is all about. I think that the new format that we have is pretty perfect. You know, we're going to spend the first half trying to just teach you about new things and give our spin on it. I mean, basically it's to teach us new things, but you guys got to learn too. So we're talking about different things that are in current events, news, politics, things going on in the economy. Nick's a really big business guy. He's always talking about technology and new technologies for business. Whatever it is, we're learning things that aren't just math and science and English. We're learning about things that matter out there in the big world. We learn. And hopefully what it does is, one, inspire you to learn on your own outside of just listening to this show. You can go and read some things and learn some things on your own. Then you find out something you like. You delve deeper into that field, discover some, get some knowledge and some skills so that now you have a leg up in that field that you find enjoying. And then you discover an opportunity and pursue it. That's the way it works. And the opportunities are everywhere. You just have to know where to look and how to go about pursuing them. And it takes time, everyone. It takes time, but lucky for you, it's enjoyable. And It's easy to do. All you have to do is flip the switch and pursue this new way of thinking where you are constantly trying to improve yourself and create a life of personal freedom to achieve the four tenets of freedom. Yeah, Nick. Do you have anything else for the group?
No, that was a pretty good way to end it.
All right, everyone. Go learn something new and share with us. If you guys find something very interesting that you want to share, go to the private Facebook group and share with us. There's not very many people in it right now, which is fine. So, but I'll read it for sure. But yeah, keep sharing your ideas, keep growing your intelligence, and keep uncovering those hidden opportunities. And by the end of it, we'll all have our shiny diamonds of success. Anyways, I'll talk to you next time. Bye.